It's 5 p.m. This is IC Radio. Hello and welcome to Monday 25th of February edition of iScience Radio. On today's show, we will be discussing alcohol, food and protest, inspired by Imperial College's recent decision to stop the hot food service at HBAR, our postgraduate and staff bar. Please join the discussion by sending a message at icradio.com/contact. Stay with us between now and 6 p.m. right here on IC Radio.
The radio show where we talk about science, we have fun with science, and we play some really cool records. This is iScience Radio.
I'm Ruby, your iScience Radio today. Dr. Hillary's producing the show, and I am joined in the studio by Rachel.
Hi.
Harry.
Hello.
And Kathy.
Hey.
But first, as usual, it's time to catch up with the latest science headlines from the iScience news team. Today's news editor is our panelist, Harry.
This is iScience Radio News.
Hi everyone, I'm Harry, and this week I'm here with Noor and Madeline from the iScience news team to give you your weekly roundup. First up, it could be the genesis of a new era of space exploration after the launch of the first privately funded mission to the moon. In early April, the Beratiate lander should touch down in the Sea of Serenity, where it will take photos and measure the magnetic field on the lunar surface. News of the launch broke just 24 hours after the Japanese probe Hayabusa 2 landed successfully on the surface of the asteroid Ryugu, where it will take samples, release a rover, and hopefully return home safely at the end of the year.
Next up, we're sad to report that the Bramble K. melomis, a small brown rat species found on an island off northern Australia, has become the world's first mammal to go extinct as a result of human-induced climate change. Unfortunately, conservation efforts have failed, and there have been no sightings for nearly 10 years. The key cause of the mammal's extinction is thought to have been due to ocean inundation, resulting from rising sea levels, leading to a dramatic loss of habitat. If temperatures continue to rise at the rate they are, we're likely to lose almost 8% of species worldwide, with those in Australia and New Zealand being at greatest risk.
And finally, an advisory committee to the US Food and Drug Administration has strongly endorsed esketamine, a derivative of the drug ketamine, for use in treatment-resistant depression. Ketamine is licensed for use by doctors as a painkiller and sedative, although it is also known for its illicit popularity as a party drug. This latest recommendation makes it likely that the FDA will approve esketamine for marketing in the US, making it the first new drug treatment for depression to be released in decades.
And that's all we've got time for here. Tune in next week for more science news.
Thank you, Harry, and to the iScience news team. Any thoughts on the news today?
Yeah, so, I mean, as someone with an astrophysics background, obviously the advances this week have been really cool. But I think actually the most important piece that we were discussing this week was the extinction, with the first species that has gone extinct because of climate change, man-made climate change, which is a bit harrowing, I'd say.
Yes, I've got to agree with you there. Moving on though.
Yes, onto a slightly more happier subject, I hope.
Oh, maybe not, because we begin tonight's programme with some news that has shaken the postgraduate and staff community here at Imperial. So due to a college decision, HBAR is finishing its evening food service. So no food will be available in the bar beyond 7 p.m. and this is from Friday the 1st of March. So right now, at HBAR, food is provided by the college and the drinks are provided by the union, which is a bit of a complicated clash. And according to Felix, the decision to change this and stop evening food service is due to a £20,000 loss a month. The problem people are having is that this is such a sudden announcement. There's been very little student consultation, especially given that this is a student issue. And it's been a financial decision rather than one based on student experience. According to the Felix, elected sabbatical officers were not consulted prior to this decision being made, despite it having a clear effect on the union, given that that's who provides the drinks, and that will clearly have an effect on union drink sales. Jane Neary, the director of campus services, however, has said that students were not consulted, as the provision of this food, that service, is a service to the union. I guess she means as opposed to a service to the students. So any immediate thoughts, guys?
I'm so sad about no more tapas.
The mozzarella sticks.
I know, the mozzarella sticks.
They are the best mozzarella sticks.
But, like, it is such an unfair decision. If on a more serious note, you know, it's a bar. People drink there. And food is something which helps sort of alleviate, you know, not becoming as drunk and therefore, you know, making the union a more safe place to be. So there's some serious issues with this decision, and I don't think like they've considered all the options.
No, I completely agree with that, actually, especially having worked in bars for several years now. Food helps really slow down the speed at which people get drunk. And so this is actually, it's a health and safety issue that they are creating where there really doesn't need to be one. And when you think about where Imperial is based, it's in the middle of London. People are having to travel on trains to get home. Making a situation where people are going to be drunker is a really dangerous position to be putting students in.
It's not like we're in the countryside. It's not like we're going to run out into a couple of meadows and like...
through the fields of wheat.
Yeah, it's a busy road out there. Yeah. The immediate road that we get onto coming out of Imperial... yeah, not safe place to be.
It doesn't even look like a road, but there we go. That's another issue.
That's true. Yeah. That makes it all the more dangerous. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That you cannot tell where the road begins. If you can't tell when you're sober, then, I mean...
yeah. God help you when you're drunk.
Exactly. So, apparently now, though, students are allowed to bring any food into H-Bar or get takeaway delivered to the bar. What do we think to that as a solution?
Takeaway is quite expensive.
Yeah. Mm.
And as students, I don't think we all have the budget to get takeaway so often. If we're drinking and if we're just socialising in the bar, it doesn't have to be heavy drinking, just there's food.
Yeah, I mean, you can get a small one of the tapas things for, what, about £4?
Mm. Yeah.
If you just want to get one. Mm. Whereas if you're getting a takeout, you generally need to spend at least £10 to even get delivery, don't you?
Well, I think, yeah, in Deliveroo, you have to pay, like, £3.50, so that is the equivalent to a tapas.
And I guess they said that the other bars are going to have food still, so maybe we could go there, but that's still a bit of a trek to get there.
Yeah.
And it's nice having this postgraduate and staff area.
It's such a social hub for us.
Yeah. As well as all the, you know, proper issues we can talk about, like finances and safety, it's also just nice to be able for us as postgraduates to be able to go to that bar, have our little space, share. It's especially nice to share food when it's the tapas. Like, that tends to be what happens. Someone always gets too many chips and we share them out.
Yeah.
And it's just lovely and it makes me really sad that... can be taken away.
I'm not sure they think it's too many chips, but everyone else does.
Very true.
That's our sort of one opportunity to have a hot meal for the day, and like that's just going to be taken away. So it's just not fair.
It just seems very bizarre, especially because it's going to most likely affect the jobs of the people working at H-Bar. That they weren't even informed of this before it was released, as far as I'm aware. They weren't informed of it until it was released out to the general population.
I think that's one of the biggest problems here, is that just lack of any communication.
Yeah.
Like, we're all just kind of scrambling around now and trying to come up with what we can do about it, but we don't even know what the problem is to be able to solve it. It's very frustrating.
One thing I'm confused about is this £20,000 loss per month, and I don't really know how... because every time I go down there, everyone's getting food.
Yeah.
There's so much food being served, so I don't really know how that loss of money, where that loss of money is from.
I believe, actually, producer Hillary told me earlier, there was something to do with the rent. So the union rents it, but to themselves. So it's sort of a cost effect, but not really. I'm getting some nods from Hillary. I believe I'm on the right lines here. So that just makes it more confusing, really. It's a strange one.
I'm just looking for the information about it now. It's basically to do with just looking at the accounts and moving the money between them. So the actual union, so the college itself is moving money between its accounts. So yes, the H-Bar account would be £20,000 down because it's been taken out, it's paid rent to the college.
Right.
But it's just like the same. It's like if I had two bank accounts and I took £100 out of one and put it in the other, and then said, "Oh, I'm bankrupt in this account because I've run out of money," even though actually what I have hasn't changed.
Mm.
So it seems a bit shifty, almost.
Yeah, I think there needs to be better transparency before they actually release that information, because I think it's just quite questionable at the moment.
We've got a lovely comment from Mozzarella Sticks saying, RIP me. And yes, we are mourning your loss truly here in the studio today.
Yeah, I would say a moment's silence, but that doesn't work on radio as well as it does on TV. Yeah.
We can take a second. Okay,
there we
that
go.
Was lovely. That was beautiful. So what do we think to Jane Neary, the director of campus services, saying that it's a service from the college to the union, which implies that it's not to the students, and therefore that's why students were consulted, which, to be honest to me, doesn't read very well.
Is the union not made out of students?
Is it not the students' union yeah. with a possessive apostrophe in
exactly.
there somewhere?
I just found that the strangest comment. I didn't understand. I think it's part of the thing of it being like a financial decision that they're breaking it down into, oh, well, it's for you, and therefore we don't need to consult you about it. It's been just where as students being completely taken out of the equation. It's silly.
It just seems like they've decided what they want to do, and they will give reasons until people stop fighting it.
I just think it was like, they didn't ask for anyone's feedback. Like, they didn't say, you know, like, we're going to trial this, see how it runs. We'd really appreciate your feedback. It was, this is happening in next week.
I completely agree. That would have, if they'd done that, then I could have understood that we could have definitely tried that, see what it was like getting food in and getting takeaway. And given that a lot of us go down to HBAR, they would have gotten a lot of feedback. We would certainly have said if we didn't think it
yeah.
worked. But because of this, we didn't have that opportunity. But we can do something about it now, maybe. There is a student-led online petition to try and overturn the decision before it happens, which I have signed, and I encourage the rest of you to do so.
Where can we find that?
I believe... Oh, I think our producer's having a look up, because I'm not entirely sure.
Fair enough.
I remember it being on change.org. Oh, we're getting the Felix. We're finding
Isn't
out for you.
Isn't change.org one of those things where if enough people sign it, the government will have a...
To be fair, I might
debate.
Be completely lying. It might not be change.org.
But wouldn't it be wonderful if the government had to consider that for a debate?
Yeah.
Nothing else
amazing.
Important going on at
no,
the moment.
No, not at all.
Not Brexit.
Yeah.
tinycc/HBAR. And it's on page 10 of the Felix, of this week's Felix. Lovely. That's where you can find the link. Apologies for the misdirection.
And you can probably find it if you... If you're good with your Boolean algorithms on Google, you'll probably be able to find it through that as well.
Well, well, well.
What else can we do apart from signing a petition? Can we send emails?
I believe we can, yes. There's been encouraging to email to provost@imperial.ac.uk. And that's Ian Walmsley there. He is in charge of all of that. So he is the person to contact directly as well. Do we think that a petition is the best way forward?
I think it's difficult with the amount of time we've been given.
Yeah. I mean, I would sort of like to get involved in a protest of some sort, but I mean we've got 1 week's notice, so it is, as Harry said, quite difficult.
Yeah, so we'll see. It's not the end, though. We can always come back. You know, it's not completely in concrete. And maybe neither's Brexit. We'll find out. But anyway, talking about protests, we will be discussing protests later in the show. But now it's time for a music break. Don't forget to join the discussion on icradio.com/contact. We'll be reading out some comments right after we hear Rock the Casbah by The Clash here on iScience Radio.
You have to let that rock out.
My mum and am I okay? Oh my god. My mum and Andrew have said that they can hear people talking in the background. Is it just through that, do you think? Okay, cool. I was just letting you know. That was Rock the Casbah by The Clash. Now, we've been complaining about not having food at H-Bar, but there is some scientific basis to this. We're going to spend a bit of time talking about what happens to our bodies when we pop down to the bar for a drink. So Harry is our resident bar expert. You've been working in bars for how long?
Since I was 18, so right. 5 years.
5 years. So do you want to take us through what happened?
Yeah, sure. I feel like the need to say the resident bar expert in terms of working in bars,
yeah.
Not the resident alcoholic of the course. Yeah.
Whatever you want to say.
Okay. We all bartenders. Well, I'm putting it out there now, all of us. So, when you drink an alcoholic beverage, it's absorbed both in your stomach and in your small intestine. And that splits about 20% to your stomach and 80% in the intestine. The speed of which it's actually absorbed depends on several factors. So you've got the concentration of the alcohol. So if you've had a single or a double, or if you're drinking whiskey on the rock, so something neat, or cocktails tend to be stronger as well. The type of drink, for example, carbonated drinks, spirit and mixer being the classic example, vodka, coke, something like that. They are absorbed faster, so the alcohol affects you faster from that. And obviously whether the stomach is full or empty. So if you have a big meal before you go out drinking, you won't get as drunk as quickly because it will be slowed down by the food.
So when we're talking about absorption, where is the alcohol actually going after it is absorbed?
So when we talk about the absorption, what we're talking about is the speed at which it is entering the bloodstream and dissolving into the water in the blood. And your blood then spreads the alcohol throughout your body, which is why you feel it everywhere. You know, you don't just feel kind of drunk in your head. It, you really can feel it like down in your legs if you've drunk too much. And so the alcohol in the water in the blood then enters the tissues in the body, except fat tissue. So fat doesn't absorb alcohol in the way that muscle does. Mm. In fact, it doesn't absorb it at all, whereas muscle does.
Mm.
And so there's various studies out there about whether being overweight and things to do with BMI actually affect the speed of alcohol absorption, but there's, you would have to go and search for those papers. I'm not quite sure the result of them. So once it is inside the tissues, it starts exerting its effects on your body. And the effect of alcohol depends directly on the concentration, as you might expect. And that then links back again to how much has been consumed. In terms of actually what it does to you, the alcohol content rises significantly about 20 minutes after your first drink.
That seems quite quick, actually. I would have expected it to be longer.
It does, but also if you think about students who are playing drinking games, in 20 minutes you can drink a lot of alcohol without realising it. So when people say, oh, I'm fine, and then it hit me like a train, they're being serious because they really didn't feel it. And and it takes a long time to leave the body. It takes about an hour per unit on average for the alcohol to get metabolised and processed out of your body. About 90% of that is done through the liver, where it's broken down, which is why alcoholics tend to have issues with their livers. And 5%, so half of what's left, is excreted through your urine, and the rest is breathed out.
I see. So what about some drinking myths? So Harry said the amount of alcohol you drink has an effect, but what about different types? Like, if I'm drinking beer, it feels like I'm not going to be as drunk. Like, if I have beer, it's a bit of a light one. But am I actually right? Rachel, can you tell me a bit more?
Actually, the 12-ounce can of beer and a normal glass of wine or a normal-sized cocktail actually has the same amount of alcohol in it. So each alcoholic beverage should contain one standard amount of alcohol. The only difference is the amount of liquid you're drinking, so maybe that would make you more full and not drink as much. So if you're actually drinking 12 ounces of beer versus 12 ounces of wine, of course the wine is going to make you more drunk because you're drinking more alcohol, as it was the same. Yeah.
Okay, so that's all one drink, so I'm not necessarily going to drink 12 ounces of liquor, if anyone is listening to that. So I wouldn't do that straight anyway. Like, if I've had one drink and then I think, oh, I fancy a bit of rum or something like that, what happens if I mix it up like that?
There's a saying, beer before wine and you'll be fine. But that saying actually is not that true, because because you actually, it's the amount of alcohol you drink that actually makes you a bit sicker. So if overall you're drinking more alcohol, then you will become sick and your body can only process so much alcohol before you become blackout drunk. So drinking anything alcoholic will somehow lead to dehydration and get you that nasty hangover.
I see. Because, yeah, there's sort of sayings like that, like beer before wine, you'll be fine. But then I remember there's two that rhyme that I always forget what it is, whether it's beer before, liquor before beer and you're in the clear, or I can't even say it now. And that's the point, I can't even say it now when I'm dead sober. And then when I go up to the bar and try and remember these phrases so that I know what to drink there, it doesn't quite work out. And if I want to sober down, I'll have a glass of water. Don't know if that works, but I also know that there's lots of other things that are meant to make you sober up. You've got coffee and fresh air and stuff like that. Harry, are those actually helping us?
Well, I mean, your suggestion of water is probably the best thing you can do, because what the water is doing is diluting the alcohol that's in your stomach, because it takes time for things to move from your stomach to your intestine, where the majority is absorbed. So if you are diluting that down with water or any soft drink, really, that's probably going to slow down the absorption, so you will feel less rough in the morning. No promises that it will get you in the clear completely. The real thing that's actually going to sober you up is waiting. It's just a matter of time, and you might have to go through a nasty hangover, but at least on the other side, it'll all be out of your body. coffee will not sober you up. You might feel more sober because caffeine is a stimulant. It's the same reason that people say that Jaeger bombs don't get you drunk, because you are drinking alcohol, which is a depressant, but you're offsetting some of the effects by also downing quite a caffeinated drink at the same time. And actually, Jaeger bombs are really bad for you as a result, because they mess with your body big time.
Okay, oops.
I mean, realistically, anything with alcohol isn't good for you, but we do it anyway. But yeah, so once it's absorbed into your bloodstream, it will be processed by your kidneys and lungs and primarily the liver. So this is why if you're trying to sober up before a breathalyzer test or anything else, it's not going to work, because they can still detect it through different methods. And of course, worst case scenario, a blood test.
So you mentioned water maybe being able to help you with a hangover later. You told me you had a little bit of trivia about hangovers. Do you want to share that with
us? Yes. So it is a common misconception that drinking more alcohol in the morning will help alleviate the effects of a hangover. And this is called hair of the dog. So my question to you guys is, do you know where this comes from?
I haven't a clue.
No.
So hair of the dog is actually a shortening of the full phrase, which is the hair of the dog that bit you. And it originally came from rabies, where one of the cures for rabies, or well, supposed cures for rabies, and we're talking 2,000 years ago, this disease has been around for millennia, was rubbing the hair or ashes from burnt hair of the tail of the dog that bit you into the wound.
Yikes.
And this phrase has proliferated along over millennia to what we know today, hair of the dog, which is where you then drink a shot of alcohol in the morning to help get rid of the hangover.
So I guess that means that hangovers are as bad as rabies. For that to be linked together, that is quite gross. Thank you for that disgusting fact. Is there any weird hangover cures that actually work?
Well, there's no full out cure for a hangover. The main causes of it, other than the fact that you have ingested quite a high proportion of poison to get yourself into that state, because that is what alcohol is that alcohol dehydrates you and makes you hypoglycemic, so your blood sugar drops. And as a result of its diuretic properties, you also urinate out more liquid and you sweat because of the booze blanket. But in the urine, you are losing sugars and salts. And replacing these is probably the best way to try and relieve the symptoms of the hangover. So relatively bland foods like crackers, because they aren't unpleasant on your stomach, because you might not be feeling the best in the morning. I have to say, my first hangover was the most dangerous bite of pizza that I've ever had in my life. It was fine, for those of you wondering. But yeah, to alleviate your symptoms, you want to drink water, you want to have sugar, and you want to have salts. So things like Lucozade are good.
All right, so bringing it back to food and the H-bar issue, is it actually a problem if we aren't eating whilst we're drinking or before?
Right, so the fact is, drinking on a full stomach will only delay the absorption of alcohol into the bloodstream, not prevent it. Eating before you drink is not a defence against getting drunk. Eating a filling, greasy, carb-loaded meal may prevent you from suffering worse hangover symptoms compared to drinking on an empty stomach. However, from if experience has taught us anything, then drinking on an empty stomach is a decidedly bad idea, and the risk of texting "Hey, you up?" to your ex increases dramatically. So I just wanted to talk to you guys about, do you like what kind of food that you eat before you go out, or do you just want to not eat anything and have the risk of getting drunk even, you know, quicker?
I've always been taught potatoes. I think that is from Polish heritage, that my mum has always been like, potatoes and you'll be all right. So yeah, that's mine.
Pasta.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I, for some reason, tend to eat after I start drinking. And then, so it's just, I don't get that hungry until quite late on. So yeah. I like drink a little and then eat a lot and then drink more. And I think that helps.
Well, that's the point with alcohol being delayed in absorption by eating. And that's our problem with HBAR, yeah. isn't it? You know, we need a solution here, because if we're not eating while we're drinking, then it's only going to get worse. And yeah, no one wants that situation in HBAR where people are too drunk. All right, so it's just gone 5:30 here on IC Radio. You're listening to iScience, and it's time for another musical break. We'll be right back after Escape, the Piña Colada song by Rupert Holmes.
I was tired of my lady. We'd been together too long. Like a worn-out recording of a favorite song. So while she lay there sleeping, I read the paper in bed. And in the personal columns, there was this letter I read. If you like piña colada, my lady, I know that sounds kind of mean, but me and my old lady have fallen into the same old routine. So I wrote to the paper, took out a personal ad, and though I'm nobody's poet, I thought it wasn't half bad. Yes, I like
That was Rupert Holmes with Escape, the Pina Colada song. What a bop, guys. Is
love
it not?
That song.
Best song. So, while we're talking about alcohol, Rachel is going to tell us a little bit about the introduction of minimum alcohol pricing in Scotland.
Thanks, Ruby. They introduced the minimum pricing of alcohol in Scotland from last year, 1st of May. And basically, this will require alcoholic drinks to be sold for at least 50p per unit of alcohol. And the reasoning behind this is that if the prices rise up, then people might be less inclined to buy as much alcohol as they would have, drink less large amounts of alcohol, and this would also affect people who are alcohol dependent. There has been some sort of debate of whether or not this has been a good thing. So for the people who are against this, they argue that there hasn't been any evidence that show that heavy drinkers are responsive to price changes. The evidence suggests that they are responsive in the fact that they change the type of alcohol they drink, but they don't drink the amount of alcohol they actually consume. However, on the other side, this may be a good thing for the general population because not all alcohol-dependent people there might be younger people who are becoming alcohol dependent, and this would affect them. There are also university students who are kind of prone to binge drinking, and this also might affect them from developing alcohol dependency. Some other arguments against this is whether or not they're considering social economic factors. So whether or not people who are on low budgets can be able to afford alcohol, and if they aren't willing to change the amount of alcohol they're drinking, they might be willing to, they might have tight budgets and cut down on other essential amenities, and that might affect their social well-being. So what do you guys think about this whole policy?
It's a bit of a heavy one there. Yeah, I think I understand the, at least I used to think the same way with the thing of like, oh, well, if it's pricier, people will do it less. I'm less inclined to that way now. I think it was growing up and seeing like bargain booze shops and things like that. And then it's the same with unhealthy food. Like if you go in, what are the things that you see on the like end of the aisles that are reduced? Booze and junk food. Like, so I always was of the opinion, well, if you cut that down, then people respond. But especially given on the information that you've, evidence you've just given that people who are that alcohol dependent are actually responding, then maybe not.
I mean, I'm just a little bit shocked that they have to make the minimum price 50p per unit.
It's not that much, is it?
No, like how cheap are they selling it for?
I think you think about
and where can I get some? No, no, but genuinely, like that's so cheap.
I think it mainly targets like box wine from Aldi or Costco, and I have noticed that I've been told that those prices have gone up quite a lot. So my friends who maybe buy from there might be affected. Another thing that was questionable was where do these revenues actually go? So one report says that minimum pricing revenues actually go to the supermarket, not the government. And is this a good way to help people who are alcohol dependent? Well, this policy doesn't only target alcohol dependent people. It targets everyone. So, but could they maybe go to some other stream that might be like support groups? Or
yeah, that would surely make the most sense of what to do with that money. Because otherwise it seems really dodgy if you are profiting off of this. Because essentially, if it's not making a difference to people that are alcohol dependent and they're still going to buy it, and they must know that if you're getting this data, they're getting this data, but they continue to do it, they're just profiting off of, you know, these people's addictions. And I think that's horrible.
Yeah.
I've also got this kind of mental image of kind of prohibition era black market in alcohol. If prices are going up so considerably, and if there's, you know, if they put in a curfew.
Scotland does have a curfew from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m.
Yeah, I remember seeing it because they have a curfew where I live in St Albans, and there was one where I did my undergrad in Durham where you weren't allowed open alcohol outside. It was just the council's rules. And what that resulted in actually was instead of people going, oh, I want to go home, not going to finish my drink, they would down whatever was in their glass, yeah, and then move on to the next bar.
But also, it's really quite difficult to enforce. Like, on the tube, you're not allowed to drink, but, I mean...
Oh, yeah, even yesterday, some lovely ladies drinking, yeah, gin and tonics on the tube.
Yeah, so how can you really enforce this?
And also, who's going to, in the nicest way possible, who's going to go up to a hen do, for example, and tell them they can't have their bottle of Prosecco on the train, which I've seen before?
Yeah.
Like, that's just, you know, are you going to go up to someone who's about to get married and say that?
I certainly wouldn't want to. I wouldn't dare take that happiness away. But yeah, so it's the 50p. Is that just for shops, or is that bars and pubs? And
I think it's just for shops when you buy alcohol, not from bars, and because I think they already have quite pricey.
Okay, we're getting a lot of nodding from Hillary.
I can't imagine a bar selling alcohol for less than 50p per unit.
Exactly. They're also starting to test this in Wales, I believe, before they review it in a few years and see if they want to roll this countrywide. But another thing you guys mentioned was how can they enforce this? That'd be quite hard, because if you're traveling from Wales to England or even Scotland to England, it's actually quite easy if you're at the border. So if you're rich enough, you can maybe just pop back up.
It yeah. seems like a weird yeah. plot of Gavin and Stacey. That definitely feels like something Smithy would do, going across the border so he could drink a bit more.
There are constabularies around the country who've stopped policing people growing their own marijuana because they're too busy. And sure, you know, if they're allowing people to grow that for personal use, that was then the rule. If they can't enforce that because they don't have enough cops, how are they going to enforce something like this?
Yeah, it seems, I don't know, maybe I'm being very cynical here, but it seems like a bit of like a, oh, we'll just put a pricing on it and it'll solve itself. Like, money sorting it is the answer, rather than actually tackling any community issues at all.
I think it will have an impact, but maybe it won't have an impact for the worst people. So there's a bit of a pros and cons. So we'll see in a few years whether or not this turns out to be a good thing.
Yeah, I do agree. It's kind of like a throw sort of money at the situation rather than actually, you know, tackle the deep-rooted issues.
Yeah, I think especially around addiction, it's a really tricky topic, you know, including alcoholism, but everything else as well. It's tough, and it's so... And I think we have such a weird relationship in this country with alcoholism. Like, I remember going to see A Star Is Born, which is brilliant. congrats for that. I think they won Best Song Oscar for last night or something. And when it was the scenes where... Have any of you guys seen it? No.
Star Is Born.
So oh, good. You've seen it. Yeah. So there are lots of scenes, right, where it's Bradley Cooper, who's an alcoholic in the film, and he really and it ends very badly for him. And he, but there's lots of scenes of him struggling and acting in a way that concerned me and horrified me. But then loads of people in the audience were like laughing along, and I think that just really shows out that just strange relationship with alcoholism. I don't know. We don't. It's treated as something so trivial.
Yeah. It's a thin line between being funny and actually being quite concerning.
I think there's also the issue that people don't view alcoholism in the same way they would view, for example, an addiction to heroin. Because heroin is viewed as a drug and alcohol is not. And alcohol's actually very addictive.
Yeah.
And actually, alcoholism is so easy to slip into because... it's widely available and people don't realise it's happening until it's too late, in a way that you don't see with most other drug addictions. People look at it and see someone's addicted and go, oh, all of these kind of awful things that they think about the person because they've got into that situation. But an alcoholic could become an alcoholic just because they come home every day, they have a glass of wine, they have their second glass of wine, they don't realise, and it becomes a habit and then an instinct, and then an addiction.
Well, I think we've exhausted that, but I think that was a great conversation, to be honest. And it's time for our final song of the show. Before Kathy tells us a little bit about protesting, here is What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, here on IC Radio.
too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love. Don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Punish me, sister, with brutality. Sister, talk to me, sister, so you can see. Sister, oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Right now. Right now. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh. Right on. Right on.
That was Marvin Gaye with What's Going On, a song about the police brutality Marvin Gaye witnessed at an anti-Vietnam War protest in California. So now we're going to talk about climate change protests. Kathy, can you tell us a bit more?
Sure. So on Friday the 15th, pupils from around the UK went on strike as part of a global campaign for action on climate change. Students around the country walked out of schools to call on the government to declare a climate emergency and take active steps to tackle the problem. Organisers, Youth Strike for Climate, said protests took place in more than 60 towns and cities, with an estimated 15,000 taking part. They carried placards, some reading, "There is no Planet B." The action was part of a much wider global movement known as Schools for Climate Action. And it all began with a 15-year-old Swede, Greta Thunberg, skipping class to sit outside government buildings in September, accusing her country of not following the Paris Climate Agreement. So before we get started on our conversation, I just wanted us to listen to this clip on Greta speaking at the EU conference last Thursday.
We need to focus every inch of our being on climate change. Because if we fail to do so, then all our achievements and progress have been for nothing. And all that will remain of our political leaders' legacy will be the greatest failure of human history. and they will be remembered as the greatest villains of all time because they have chosen not to listen and not to act. And if you still say that we are wasting valuable lesson time, then let me remind you that our political leaders have wasted decades through denial and inaction. And since our time is running out, we have decided to take action. We have started to clean up your mess, and we will not stop until we are done. Thank you.
So since then, tens of thousands of children across Belgium, Germany, Sweden, Switzerland and Australia have been inspired to hold their own demonstrations. I think so. The biggest protests were held in the UK were held in London, Brighton, Oxford and Exeter. The UK Student Climate Network said the group which helped coordinate the protests have four key demands. First, the government should declare a climate emergency. Second, it should also inform the public about the seriousness of the situation. Third, the national curriculum should be reformed to include the ecological crisis. And finally, fourth, the age of voting should be lowered to 16 so younger people can be involved in decision making around environmental issues. Okay, so I just wanted to talk about this absolutely savage tweet that I'm so proud of Greta for posting. But so Greta tweeted about the UK protests, writing, British PM says that the children on school strike are wasting lesson time. That may well be the case. But then again, political leaders have wasted 30 years of inaction, and that is slightly worse.
Get absolutely.
A round of applause for Greta.
Phenomenal.
So for me, Greta is a really important icon for our world and its current political and social climate. She reminds us that protest is really important. She has started a conversation that has got the whole world talking. She reminds us that we do have autonomy and we can do something about an important issue. Don't just sit back, act. So, has anyone been involved in any protests, and why did you get involved in this particular protest?
Yeah, so I've been involved in two protests. I've just remembered what the other one was. So the first one was one of the Brexit marches. This was way back 2 years ago when Brexit was first voted for, nominally.
Boo.
Without going into my strong political views on the subject, there was an absolutely enormous march through London.
Mm.
There were people, as far as the eye could see, both in front and behind me.
Yeah.
I can't remember how many people there were, but it was rammed.
Yeah.
And
what did it feel like being there?
It was really exciting, actually. Mm. I'd never been on a protest march before. And it was a bit odd because obviously everyone kind of had the same view on the matter, obviously. But it was people of all ages.
Mm.
And everyone was just kind of having a good time. So because we were very much in the middle of the pack, mm. we weren't the ones at the figurehead who were shouting all the slogans. There was a lot of just chatting to people and wandering around with placards and stuff. The other one I went to was far more recently, and it was about anti-Semitism in the Labour Party.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a far more interesting protest because there were so few people involved. Because realistically, the only people who were actually interested in that were the Jewish population.
Mm.
So there was a far smaller group. It was entirely based in Parliament Square.
Mm-hmm.
There were still placards and posters that people were holding, but there was actually division within the group because some people were wandering around with Israeli flags and stuff, and a lot of the people, myself included, were saying this is not only inappropriate, it's unnecessary. You're taking away from what this is about, which mm-hmm. is an institute of anti-Semitism in one of the main political parties.
Mm.
And that was a far more serious protest,
yeah.
for me at least.
Yeah.
But I think there's another Brexit march coming up soon, potentially.
Yeah, there is. I think it's on the day before Brexit or something.
That sounds familiar, yeah.
Everyone look it up.
See,
don't take my word for
there.
It. Yeah. but yeah, I'm definitely going to be there. How about anyone? Has anyone else done any protests of any?
Yeah, I've got to confess. No.
Yeah, I know.
That sounds terrible, doesn't it? No. I think I should probably definitely get more involved now that I'm down here and, you know, right outside government. And I mean, could be making a difference. I've got to lay some live news on you all. Labour will back amendment for second referendum, Corbyn says, which is very interesting.
It took them long enough.
So, I mean, we can't say that, oh, yeah, that's a result of protest, but.
But protest is very important, and actually change does come about from it. I mean, if you look at about the history of the AIDS ACT UP activist group, then they actually changed like the medical like regime. They were able to implement treatments that actually successfully worked. They got involved in the discussion, and you know, really great and important things came from it. So I wish I, you know, I think in the future, one of my sort of goals is to become more active and actually don't just sit back and be like, oh, this is like, just get depressed about things. Let's join in the conversation. Let's do something about it.
Actually, I just remembered in Hong Kong 4 years ago, there was a big protest against the how the Chinese government was making us do our elections, basically.
Oh, was that the yellow umbrellas?
It was the yellow umbrella thing, and it was massive because people were sitting on the highways, none of the public transport could be moved, and this went on for a few weeks, I think. Mm. And I didn't get involved with it. I was just busy. It just never occurred to me to go. But when you said that a lot of change can come out of this, there was some change that came out of this, but I'm not sure if it was for the better or for the worse, because people have told me that some people are a bit scared of being protesting in Hong Kong just because of what happened to the people who protested back then.
Can I ask what that was?
Basically, they were Chinese government wanted to pre-select a group of people for our leader. I forgot his name. Leader. Before we can vote for that person. So essentially, that person would have been pre-selected by the Chinese government, would be pro-Chinese, and some people from Hong Kong didn't agree with that because that's some sort of... that's just part of the whole Chinese surveillance, blah, blah, blah. Some things that happened then was this bookseller who sold books against the Chinese government got kidnapped and was found in China a few weeks later. Some of the people who led the protests, they got sent to jail, and then they were going to go to the U.S. or something to study. They got their visas denied because of that. So Hong Kong used to be quite a big protest sort of city, but now I think some people are a bit scared because of what the Chinese government can do if you maybe step outside of the line. Mm. So that's one bad side of protesting.
I think also I was speaking to Harry in the break, and we were saying, oh, I really wish, you know, the protests about climate change that Greta has inspired, you know, happened in our generation.
Because
I mean, to be a student at that time would just be so inspiring, I think.
Yeah. I think it's a really good example of the be the change you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
You know, who they're going to be the generation... If we're going to have to clean it up, let's be realistic, it's our generation who have to deal with this. And they're already trying to do something, and that's so cool.
Yeah, it's really inspirational.
They're 15.
Yeah, I mean, Greta was 15 when she started this. Like, what an inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
16 now.
Queen.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that a lot. It was the same thing with the protests against gun usage in America, you know. It was young people that were the forefront of that. I think we're seeing that a lot more now, and it's great. It's awesome. And even though we're just outside that generation, I'm only 22, but, you know, we can still, you know, do something. Yeah. As you say, take action.
Listeners, be inspired.
Yes, be inspired by us young people.
If you don't like it, protest.
Absolutely. Any final thoughts on protesting before we wrap up?
Let's go to the Brexit protest.
Yes,
let's do it. We'll have to organise something like that. A little iScience branch of protesting. That sounds lovely. And that's just about all we've got time for today. I think we've had a great conversation about drinking and protests, both about the HBAR, food closure, and climate change. Thank you so much to our panelists today, Kathy, Harry and Rachel, for joining me. And thank you to my wonderful producer, Hillary, back there. You can follow... Oh, and Gina. I'm so sorry, Gina. You can follow us on Twitter at iSciencemedia and find us at iSciencemag.co.uk. And don't forget to join us next week for a special edition on Stephen Hawking right here on IC Radio.